you would open your Bibles to the book of Matthew. Matthew 19. As we've been talking about pursuing marriage, dating, courtship, all that type of stuff, we've kind of covered the biblical basis for marriage and the best example of courtship, which is Jesus Christ and his love for his church. Now we're going to deal with some more practical aspects of how do you know if this is the person you're supposed to marry. So you meet someone, you're talking to them, you like them. Is this the person you should marry? So that's what we're going to deal with today. So where we're going to begin is in Matthew 19, and the first thing we're going to look at is it lawful? If you listen to a traditional marriage ceremony or read a traditional marriage ceremony, one of the statements that will be made by the preacher is if a marriage is not lawful or not according to the law of God. Not every marriage has... is considered lawful. So we're going to look at Matthew 19 and other passages of Scripture and deal with this first. Matthew 19, verse 9. I say to you, whoever shall put away his wife, speaking of divorce, except it be for fornication, shall marry another, commits adultery. Whoever marries her, which is put away, does commit adultery. Speaking here of divorce and remarriage being adultery. Okay, that would be contrary to God's law. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, if you turn over there. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And verse 10. To the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord. Here is God's commandment for married people. Let not the wife depart from her husband. But if she depart, let her remain unmarried, or be reconciled to her husband, and let not the husband put away his wife. You can read elsewhere in Romans about how the law binds a married couple together until death. We know from the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not commit adultery. Now go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 5. As you're turning there, this passage in 1 Corinthians is teaching that if someone is married, they should not leave their spouse and marry someone else. The context here is also mainly referring to someone who is married to an unbeliever. A Christian married to someone who's not a Christian. He's saying, don't divorce your non-Christian husband to go find you a Christian husband. Don't divorce your non-Christian wife to go find a Christian wife. You need to stay married. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. He's speaking here about coming before God and making vows. And this is what he says. When you vow a vow to God, what is a marriage covenant? It is a vow. We talk about exchanging your vows. When you make a vow, defer not to pay it. When you make a vow to God, you better keep it. For he has no pleasure in fools. So who is the fool? The person who makes a vow before God and has no intent of keeping it. Pay what you have vowed. Verse 5. Better it is that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. It is far better to not make a vow before God than to make a vow before God and break that vow. So the very, very first thing when you begin to talk about, is this the right person for me? And that is the question you have to ask, are they already married? If they're already married, then the answer is no. That is not the right person for you. Now, this kind of was one of those things you say, well, this shouldn't even need to be spoken. But let's just be honest and know that many young ladies fall in love with men that are already married. And many men flirt with women that they're not their wife. Okay? Many times a man may fall in love with a married woman. How many of y'all know about the new president of France, how he met his wife? Okay. When he was 17 years old, she was his high school teacher and married to someone else. And he told her, I'm going to marry you. That's how he met his wife. She was already married and was his high school teacher. It happens. Okay. He fell in love with a married woman. That is unlawful. That is contrary to the law of God. Okay, so if you meet someone and they're already married, that means this is not the person God has for you. Okay? Now, you may have some bizarre scenario like David and Abigail, where her husband dies, and then later on they get married. Okay, that can happen. It's okay for widows to get remarried or widowers to get remarried. But if you meet somebody and they're already married, you can know right off the bat, this is not the person for you. Now you say, well, what about if they're divorced? Well, we just looked at divorce and remarriage is adultery. If they are divorced, that's not the person for you. They should go and be reconciled to their spouse. Tell you a story to illustrate this purpose. Many preachers, myself included, have personal convictions as it relates to marriage and what marriages will perform and won't perform. Very, very few preachers that are worth their salt will just marry random strangers off the street. It does happen occasionally, but most conservative Bible-believing pastors that will not perform a wedding ceremony unless they have done premarital counseling, are known you've done premarital counseling, know that you're both in good churches, know that you're both believers, those type of things. But most pastors, myself included, will gladly do premarital counseling for anybody because it gives us an opportunity to share the gospel with them. I've done that before. A couple that wasn't going to our church, they were living together, neither of them were Christians, and they wanted me to do their wedding ceremony. So, well, I don't know that I can do your wedding ceremony, but I'll gladly do premarital counseling for you for free so I can share the gospel with them. Well, this one pastor had two people. They came. She was divorced. He was divorced. They had met each other, and they wanted to get remarried. And so they wanted to marry each other. And so he said, neither of them were Christians. He said, well, we'll talk about the marriage ceremony later, but I'll do premarital counseling for you. And so sat down through the premarital counseling. The man came to know the Lord. The woman came to know the Lord. And they continued through, and their wedding date was getting closer and closer. And then they came one day, the man and the woman came, and they're sitting there, and the woman said, you know, since coming to the Lord and after praying, I don't think I should marry this man. I think I should go reconcile with my husband that I'm divorced from. And he looked over at the man. The man said, I agree with her. I think she should go back and reconcile her with her husband. And I need to go reconcile with my wife. And they both did. They went back and reconciled their marriages. It's pretty hard to reconcile with your ex-spouse when you're married to somebody else. It's pretty hard to reconcile a marriage when somebody else intervenes in there. Now, scenario not too far from here, actually a church in Alachua County, where the man actually went to church and sat in the church services numerous times with his wife on one side of him and his girlfriend on the other side. But it's okay, because, you know, they weren't officially dating at the time, and him and his wife were having a hard time, and you know, he's probably going to leave her anyway. But they'd sit in the church service. The girlfriend would sit with their family. And you say, well, that's bizarre. That would never happen. No, it does happen. Many, many people, the way they meet is they meet somebody who's already married. Right? That happens. And if this is the line that every guy meets. This is the guy. This is the line. Well, I'm already having a really hard time, and I just really need somebody to talk to. You know, you're just so much sweeter than my wife. My wife's a mean old person. Those type of things. Many times the man just straight up lies and says he's single. Okay? Many times you'll find, I can name numerous couples that get married like within a week of their divorce being finalized. What does that mean? Okay? That means they're already seeing somebody when married. I know some people from high school. They put their whole business on Facebook. And I said, this is how I know it's true. This is on Facebook. They just put their whole business out there about how when they got divorced, there was somebody else involved, but it's okay because my husband was already having multiple affairs. He had more affairs than I did. It's a direct quote. But you go, well, wait a minute. God is not going to bless that marriage. So when you begin to say, is this the person for me? Is this the person I should marry? You need to ask this question. Are they divorced? Then no. You need to tell them, honor your vow and go reconcile. You know what? They're not going to be told that by anyone else. Very rarely are people in our society talked out of divorce. Very, very rarely. You go and tell your parents, hey, I met somebody new and they're more exciting, you know, because you know, remember my wife, she was really mean and she was always yelling and screaming and all that stuff. You know what? Many people's parents say, hey, that's great. We just want you to be happy. Many people's churches will do the same thing. I know of churches where a man has left his wife for another woman, and they completely accepted the new marriage, completely accepted it, and now you have his ex-wife who's sitting there with the kids, getting no support, who feels like the whole church was completely okay with the adultery and the abandonment. And the church said, oh, no, we're not. We love both of you. Well, if you love both of them, you would confront the adultery. So when you begin to talk about pursuing somebody, if they are already married, it is not God's will for you to be together. And if they're divorced, it's God's will for them to go back and be reconciled or remain single. It is not your place to interfere there. Okay? Many people would reconcile with their spouse if it wasn't for somebody else they see. Many people would. But somebody else comes along, and y'all, well, I'm the same, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. So when we begin to talk about this, now I know that some of y'all are divorced and remarried, and this brings conviction. Ask God for forgiveness and move on. Okay, same way with any sin. We all have sinned. We've all fallen short. We've all done things. We ask God for forgiveness. We go ask the people we've sinned against to forgive us, and we reconcile. My wife's home church, they had a pastor that ran off with a piano player, secretary, something like that. He ran off with her. The piano player's husband was a much better man than I am, because when the preacher came to the house to pick up and steal the woman to go off and get married and to run off together, the son came down the stairs with a gun to kill the preacher. And the dad told him, put the gun away, son, don't do that. I don't know, I've been like, son, you're only like 14. Go for it. You know, but you know what happened, though? They ran off, they got married, and then they came under great conviction. And they came back to the church and publicly repented in front of the whole church. Because of the devastation they caused, they went and apologized to every family member. They apologized to their children. I know couples who have committed adultery and are married as a result of that. And they have written letters to their wife's ex-husband apologizing. They've met with them in person and apologized. They've asked for forgiveness, and they ask for forgiveness and they move on. Okay? That being said, if you are single and you meet somebody who's married, keep walking. Okay? You meet somebody who's divorced, say, hey, you should go to counseling with your ex-husband. You should try to work that out. You should talk to my mother. That would be a wonderful person for you to talk to. And keep going. Keep moving on. Okay? So, is it lawful? Is this a marriage that could be blessed by God because it's in accordance with His will? Next, Numbers chapter 30. Next question you need to ask. Okay? One, is this a lawful, would it be in accordance with God's law for me to get married? Numbers 30, the next question you need to ask is, do all parents approve? Numbers 30 and verse 3. We've looked at this several times. If a woman also vow a vow to the Lord, again, this talks about every vow, but this would include marriage vows, and bind herself by a bond, being in her father's house in her youth, and her father hear her vow and her bond wherewith she has bound her soul, and her father shall hold his peace at her, then all her vows shall stand, and every bond wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand. But if her father disallow her in the day that he hears, not any of her vows or of her bonds wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand, and the Lord will forgive her because her father disallowed her. Again, speaking of the parents, the father specifically having the opportunity to nullify a vow that his daughter enters into. If your parents or your prospective spouse's parents do not want you to get married, you need to run the other way. This is very hard to convince, especially teenagers. It is hard to convince sometimes young adults. But the last thing you want is a mother-in-law or a father-in-law who is lobbying for you to get divorced. That's the last thing you want. I think I told you all before about the friend of mine whose girlfriend's dad hated him. He went and asked, can I marry your daughter? He said, no, over my dead body. And so they eloped and he married her anyway. And he asked me my opinion. I said, that's dumb. This is a dumb idea. And then they had a kid, and then they had some spat, and she went back to her daddy, and her daddy said, I told you you shouldn't have married the jerk. And so now she lives with her daddy, and has abandoned him, and now he hardly gets to see his kid because he married a girl whose parents didn't approve. Okay, parents don't get over it. I'm just throwing that out there. They don't just say, oh, well, you know, we'll get over it. No, they really resent their daughter marrying a jerk. They really resent their son marrying some ungodly girl. Now, there may be Christian parents who will get over it and work for the good of your marriage, but by and large, don't count on it. Marriage is hard enough without having in-law problems. Marriage is hard enough when everybody wants to see your marriage work. Marriage is virtually impossible when you have very close family members lobbying for it to end. Now, I know of people. I can tell you that there's a family in our church whose son went through a divorce. And here's what happened. Okay? His mother-in-law told his wife that she should be with her high school sweetheart. Okay? So she left her husband and went and married and lived with her high school sweetheart, and I don't think they ever really got married or whatever, but his own mother-in-law was actually covering for the adultery, arranging the rendezvous, arranging the meetings, lobbying against him. I can tell you names. You don't want that. Okay? If the father says no, then pack your bags and move on. If your parents don't like her, if your parents don't like him, okay, you're going to run into problems. And that being said, there's probably a very legitimate reason the parents don't approve. I have met very few parents who want their children to be miserable the rest of their lives. And I have met very few parents who don't want grandbabies. Okay? They may not want as many as we give them, but almost every one of them does want grandbabies. And they want to see you happy. So if your mother or your father says, you know, this is really a dumb idea, it's probably a dumb idea. You say, well, they're not saved. Well, even lost people want their kids to be happy. I don't know if you're aware of that, but lost people want their kids to be happy too. And normally, they know something that you don't. When you're 18, 19, 20, and your parents are 50, they have a little bit more experience than you, even if they're lost. It doesn't say here a saved father, it just says a father. Okay? And by the way, if you want to win the father or the mother to the Lord, one of the best ways to do that is by honoring your father and mother. And one of the worst things to do is to snub your nose at them and go against their wishes and tick them off. It doesn't do very good for advancing the cause of Christ in that relationship. Okay? You want to make somebody reject Christ, then go ahead and tick them off by getting married, especially if you really get in arguments about it and let them know that you don't care about their opinion. That's just a really bad idea. So, if the parents don't approve, then that's not the person for you. You say, but I know this is the person for me. Well, then why don't you pray and wait for God to change the parent's mind? You know, God is capable of changing someone's mind. I think I told y'all before of Paul Washer when he met his wife. He met her and he went to her dad, and her dad said, no, you can't talk to her. And so he said, okay, I won't. And he didn't talk to her. And then her dad, finding out that he honored his wishes, turned around and called him up and said, if that's the type of man you are, that's the type of man I want with my daughter. Because he realized he was a man of his word, he was an honorable man, and a man of great character. And you don't find men like that very often. If you want to impress somebody's parents, show them honor and respect, and respect their wishes. Okay? So, third thing, 2 Corinthians chapter 6. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. And that is, are you on the same page? Okay? Is it lawful? Do the parents approve? And are you on the same page? 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning in verse 14. Be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. What fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness? What communion has light with darkness? What concord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has he that believes with an infidel? What agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God, as God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, be ye separate, says the Lord, touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you. Here he speaks of multiple things that do not mix. Okay, this would be our saying of apples and oranges, oil and water. But he goes in light and darkness, God and devils, you know, idols and the worship of God. He goes multiple things that don't mix. And the point of his thing is that believers and unbelievers don't mix. You are going to have conflict. It's just not going to work. And he uses a wonderful illustration here of being unequally yoked. Okay, the idea here is a yoke of oxen. And a yoke is the big little thing, the big thing that goes over the neck, and the two little pins, the U-pins that come up underneath to hold them together, and then you hook that to a plow and the oxen pull together. If you have a big oxen and a little oxen, that yoke is going to get twisted and strangle both of them. If you have a strong oxen and a weak oxen, it's going to get twisted and it's going to strangle both of them. If you have an ox and you have a mule, it's not going to work. You have to have equally strong or as close as possible ox to pull together. Because if that yoke gets twisted, then the yoke pin underneath the neck will strangle the animal. And if you have them where they're unequally yoked, not only is the field not going to get plowed, the load's not going to be hauled, but you're going to end up killing, sometimes, your animals. Even if you don't kill the animal, you're going to severely harm them, and no work's going to get done. He uses that illustration as it relates to our relationships. It's not primarily here speaking about marriage, but it does apply directly to marriage. If you are serving the Lord and you marry somebody who's not serving the Lord, you're going to kill each other. That's just the way it is. If you believe in Jesus and you're a believer and they're not a believer, you're going to kill each other. That's just the way it is. You may not kill each other, but you're going to have a lot of pain and a lot of hurt, and not much is going to get done. That's just the way it is. It's two unequally yoked oxen. So this primarily speaks to, when we talk about marriage, and that is if someone is not a believer, when you take this passage and you apply it to marriage, if someone is not a believer, that is not the Lord's will, period. Okay? Now this brings up the idea of missionary dating. How many of y'all know what missionary dating is? Okay, missionary dating is, I'm a believer, she's really cute, not a believer, I will date her to win her to Christ. Okay, that's called missionary dating. Okay, I'm gonna date them, but my whole purpose is really, really missions. It has nothing to do with how beautiful she is and how attractive she is and how loose her morals are. It has everything to do with, I care about her soul. Okay, and sometimes girls do the same thing. It has nothing to do with the family he comes from, that he's super popular and that he's really handsome and he's all muscular. It's really, I care about his soul. Okay, and that's missionary dating. It's a bunch of baloney. But what happens in that is people say, well, I'm going to win them to the Lord. It never works. You can find one or two instances where an unbeliever married a believer and eventually they got saved and it resulted in a wonderful, wonderful life. You can find that, but that is the exception to the rule. What you can also find is the guy who will profess faith in Jesus just to get inside a woman's skirt. That happens quite often. Okay? Many people will tolerate Sunday morning for a beautiful woman. Okay? You have no idea what a man will do for a pretty woman. They will go to church. They will read the Bible. They will sing at the top of their lungs. They'll even join the choir until you get married, and then they'll skip out. It happens all the time. Girls will do the same thing. So if someone is dating someone who's not a believer, they're in a relationship and they're romantic, and then that person professes faith in Jesus Christ, we have to really question whether the person believes in Jesus or whether the person wants to maintain the relationship. I have seen people who have broken up, and as a result of the breakup, oh, I see the light now. I really want to start going to your church and believe in Jesus. Are they really believing Jesus? Are they really trying to maintain the relationship? You know what? You'll never know until after you get married and find out the truth. And that's a really bad time to find out the truth. So don't even start down that road. Okay? If you really care about the person's soul, then send someone else to share the gospel with them. If that woman, all you care about her is loving Jesus, then let your mother talk to her. Okay? Let some other lady in the church talk to her. If you are just so concerned that man's going to hell, then have your brother go out with him and share the gospel with him. Have your father share the gospel with him. Invite him to the men's meeting at church where you know he's not coming to sit by you because you're not going to be there. Because you know what's going to happen? They're going to lie. They're going to pretend. Or even if they do genuinely profess faith in Jesus Christ, they're in some respects following you, not Jesus. And this is a very, very dangerous place to be, especially as a guy who may marry a girl. Say, well, she's going to church, she loves Jesus, all that. No, she just loves you. And when the truth is going to come out when you have kids, and the kids say, Mommy, what's the truth about this? She's going to say, Daddy says. And I go along with it because Daddy wants to. No, you want somebody who is on the same page as you. Now you say, okay, well, they're a Christian. Well, the equally yoked goes far beyond a mule and an ox. It goes with two oxen that are the same height and strength. Are you on the same page? I mean, you need to have spiritual maturity. Is it possible for someone to be more spiritually mature than the other one? You're always going to have that. Okay? Someone is always going to be more spiritually mature than someone else. In one area, two areas, five areas, all areas. That's just the part of life. If you had to marry somebody who got saved on the exact same day at the exact same second you did, no one would ever get married. There is going to be strengths and weaknesses. But if you are, say, a conservative Baptist and you're marrying a liberal Methodist, they may be a Christian, but you're going to have a lot of problems. I know people who were Baptists and they married a Presbyterian. Hey, they got everything in common until babies come along. Do we baptize them, yes or no? And that's something you got to figure out before you get married. That's something you need to talk about. What is your strengths, your weaknesses, your walk with the Lord? Are you on the same page spiritually? Are you on the same page as it relates to backgrounds? Now, this is something that a lot of people don't take into consideration because we're in love. But do you have similar backgrounds and expectations as it relates to spiritual things, marriage, family, etc.? So let's take an example. Let's say you have a young lady who's an only child, went to a $50,000 a year private school, her father is a multi-billionaire, and she just got back from a tour of Europe, marrying a guy who's one of 14 kids, just got his GED after being homeschooled, and is working down at the mini mart. If they get married, do you think they're going to have problems? But they're both Christians. Right? Now, can they work it out? Absolutely. But should they maybe kind of try to work this out before they get married? Yes. Can we see 1,000 pitfalls that are going to come into the marriage right away? Yes. You better hope that she has a tremendous walk with the Lord and has realized that she doesn't love money and things. Because otherwise, they're going to be a huge fight the day after the wedding. So just because you're both Christians does not mean you're on the same page. You need to talk through all those things. Are you on the same page? Are you on the same page as it relates to children, as it relates to education of children, as it relates to money, as it relates to cleanliness, the expectation of lifestyle? You marry somebody who's expecting a 5,000-square-foot home and a 3-car garage and a Ferrari, and they marry somebody who's expecting a 1,000-square-foot home and a 1982 pickup truck, you're going to have a problem. Okay? Are you on the same page? You need to make sure you're on the same page. If you're not on the same page, then that's not the person for you. I mean, who really wants to fight every moment for the rest of their lives? Who wants to have the threat of divorce always hanging over their head? Who wants to really wonder if their spouse is going to find somebody that's wealthier than them? Find somebody that's better looking than them. Find somebody that's more country or more city than them. You really need to go through and say, are we on the same page? Can you hook up the same yoke to both of us without us strangling each other? Okay, that's the question here. So, okay, do your parents approve? Is it according to God's law? Are you on the same page? Amos chapter 3. Amos chapter 3. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos. Amos chapter 3, verse 3. Can two walk together except they be agreed? Can you ride in the same car if you're going to different places? If you want to go to Mexico and I want to go to Canada, can we share a ride together? No, it's not going to work. You and I may have everything in common. You and I may be on the same spiritual level. You and I may have the same maturity, same ideas about family and marriage and kids and everything. You and I may be the closest of friends. Our families may love each other. But if you're going to Canada and I'm going to Mexico, we can't go together. So the next question you have to ask is, are we going the same direction with our lives? If you want to be a missionary in the jungles of Africa and they want to serve the Lord in New York City, it's not going to work. You can find many times where the two become one and the two visions and dreams, God melds together and God works them together. And there's going to be a natural give and a take, and there's going to be a natural adaptation and further understanding of God's will for you and God's direction for you. But if you are going opposite directions in life, it is not going to work. Somebody has misinterpreted God's will for their life if they get married. If someone is, I want to be the CEO of a company, and so I got to move to San Francisco, and I got to live in San Francisco, and she wants to run the country farm, it's just not going to work. But this is where my family's been for generations. This has been our family farm, and I inherited it from my grandmother. It's not going to work. You can't live in San Francisco and Kansas at the same time. It just doesn't work that way. So what you have to ask is, are we going the same direction? This kind of goes, are we on the same page? But you can have two people with spiritual maturity, two people with the same idea as it relates to money and the kingdom of God, but be called to go in completely opposite directions. And that's okay. Just don't get married. It's okay that you met somebody who's a wonderful Christian young man whose God has called to go somewhere else. Then God has called him to marry somebody else. It's okay to meet a beautiful young lady who loves the Lord and you have so much in common, but they've been called to do something different. I mean, how many of y'all think maybe, you know, the Apostle Paul would be a tremendous catch for a woman? Okay, only he was called to be single. Thanks to be you. You met the man of your dreams. He's not the man of your dreams because he's called to be single. Are you going the same direction? Are you pursuing the Lord in the same way? If somebody wants to be a missionary and somebody, you know, wants to be a stay-at-home mom, that can work. Okay? She just may be a stay-at-home mom in Africa. If somebody is wanting to pursue the Lord and their dreams are the same and the direction's the same, that can work. But if they have opposite ideas and opposite directions, it's only a matter of time before they reach a Y in the road and they go their separate ways. Either that, or they're going to be a boat anchor around their ministries where they cannot serve the Lord because they're trying to maintain a marriage that probably shouldn't have taken place to begin with. And I know many guys like that. They were called to the mission field, so they met their wife, and now they're not on the mission field. Well, what happened? God changed his mind, or your wife changed yours? If you're not going the same direction, then don't get married. There's nothing wrong with meeting someone and saying, wow, she's pretty, and I'm not going to marry her. That's not, you can do that. It's possible.
Okay, you're capable of doing that. So, are you going the same direction? Lastly, and I want to turn to Ephesians 5. This is a really, 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 really big issue that needs to be thought through and needs to be asked well before you get married. Ephesians 5, beginning in verse 22. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as unto the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. He is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Now, I know a lot of women that I've done marriage counseling with that say, I can't submit to my husband because he's an alcoholic. I can't submit to my husband because he's not saved. I can't submit to my husband because he would kill all our kids. I can't submit to my husband because of blah, 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 blah. I've heard every reason in the book, and what I would say to them is you should have thought about that before you married him. People read this, and then the feminist reads this and says, oh, that's demeaning to women. No, haven't we already established that the woman has a choice whether she marries a man or not? We've already established that the woman can say, no, I don't want to marry this man, and she shouldn't be forced to marry him. So no one held a gun to your head and say, marry this guy. You chose to marry him, so you made your bed, now lie in it. I know somebody that met their spouse in a bar, and then they complained because he was an alcoholic. Well, what did you expect? You married somebody who was already married to somebody else at the time you met, and he cheated on them with you, and now you're upset because he cheats on you? You knew it when you married them. When you think about, as a young lady, marrying a man, before you're married is the time to ask the question of whether you can submit to them. And if the answer is no, it doesn't matter how much you love him, it doesn't matter how good looking he is, or how much money he has, or how much he loves Jesus, if you don't want to submit to him, then don't marry him. If you can't trust him with your life and the life of your children, then you shouldn't marry him. That should be a no-brainer. But we're in love. If you're not willing to sacrifice your life for that marriage, then don't enter into the marriage. If you can't submit to the guy, don't marry him. The time to figure out whether you can submit to a man is before you get married. So, submission is a very easy thing. And how many of y'all would submit your finances to Warren Buffett? I would. He's a proven multi-billionaire. He knows what he's doing. How many of y'all would submit your personal finances to the homeless man on the corner? I wouldn't. He's a proven failure. He knows he's not going to do good with them. So when you as a woman are thinking about getting married, are you marrying a Warren Buffett or a homeless man? Hey, there's homeless men that I saw one that they had a nice radio voice, man. He had a great voice. Right? I'm sure there's some of them that are good looking. I'm sure some of them have great senses of humor. But do you really want to submit your life to a man who's good looking, has a good sense of humor, who's going to wreck your life? Then don't marry him. You find a man, say, man, if I entrusted him with my children, my life, my body, everything, he's going to do good with it, okay, marry that guy. But if you're not willing to sacrifice for that person, don't marry them. Okay, keep reading. Verse 25. Husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but it should be holy and without blemish, so ought men to love their wives as their own body. Now, many men I know, through marriage counseling, refuse to sacrifice their hobbies, refuse to sacrifice things for that woman. Okay? You'd be amazing how people, that's not my husband, that's the man I'm married to. The man you're married to is your husband, but you know, that woman, okay, well, that woman is your wife. But many times they say, well, I just can't give that up for her. You should have thought about that before you got married. If she's not worth giving up your truck for, hunting for, fishing for, then she's not worth marrying. That's just the truth. If you're not willing to make a sacrifice for that girl, she's not the one for you. If you're not willing to sacrifice your time, your energy, your money, your life, don't marry her. If she's not worth it to you, then don't ruin her life and yours. Don't marry her. So when you begin to talk about these things, when you begin to talk about, is this the person for me, male or female, the last question you'd ask is, am I willing to sacrifice my life for them? Now, this brings up an issue that I want to talk about. I have probably a different perspective than most Christian people on this. You say, what about people who have children already? They, you know, through sexual immorality, they already have children. What about those who are not sexually pure? What about people who were raped, molested? What about people with traumatic events in their past? What about people who, you know, their parents are divorced? Because many times Christian parents tell their children, if they come from a divorced family, you can't talk to them. If they are sexually impure, that's not for you. Okay? That's many times what they say. Now, each parent and each family, you need to pray about and decide those things. But what I would say is something different. Every human being is broken in some way, shape, or form. Some are broken through poor choices, and some are broken through what other people have done to them. But before you marry someone, you need to ask whether you are willing to do what it takes to bring healing to that person's brokenness. A great article I'd encourage you to read was written by a Christian homeschooling young man, and it's called My Wife Has Tattoos. Great article. He was raised, was sexually pure, loved the Lord, served the Lord, all those other things, and he ended up marrying a girl who came out of a drug culture, had multiple sexual partners, her body was covered in tattoos, and all that type of stuff, but God had saved her and radically changed her life several years before they got married. And he was talking about his love for her, even though no one in their right mind would have ever thought they'd get together. I encourage you to read it. Now, I will say this. If you are going to marry a man with a sexual past, a man who has kids, you better be willing to deal with that, to love those children as your own, and to do what it takes to bring healing to the scars that they have. If you're not willing to do that, and you don't have the patience, and you don't have the time, and you have a different ministry that God has called you to, then don't marry that person. I'll give you some good examples. Pastor down south, didn't get married till he was like 40. Was pastor for many years, and then he married a lady who was a pastor's wife. You may have heard about it on the news. She had 5 kids, and one of the kids and her husband died in a plane crash. So he, at 40, 45 years old, married a widow with 4 kids whose husband and child had died in a horrific crash. Now, okay, you talk about ready-made family, but also, do you think that lady's going to have nightmares? Do you think she's ever going to let him get an airplane to fly off? Do you think she's going to let her kids get an airplane to fly off? Do you think the anniversary of that plane crash, she might be a little emotional? Do you think she might have some times where she wants to go to her deceased husband's grave and grieve? If you're not willing to put up with that and counsel her through that and love her through that, then don't marry her. Was there anything wrong with him marrying her? Absolutely not. Okay, that's a very good thing to do. She's a widow. She has children. Marry her. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you go from being single to having 4 teenagers in your house, and you're not willing to sacrifice some quiet time, then don't marry her. Okay? I know a young lady that was sexually assaulted and molested. And she ended up marrying somebody. And so when he walks up sometimes to give her a hug behind her, it triggers the thoughts of her abuse, and she'll run, have a panic attack, and lock herself in the bathroom screen. Now, is that her fault? No. But if you're not willing to do that, then don't marry a girl who was sexually assaulted. By the way, 1/4 of all women have been sexually assaulted in some way, shape, or form. Been molested. 25%. If you're not willing to be patient and gracious with her, then don't marry her. And when it comes to things like a sexual past, okay, she's a single mom, those type of things. If you're not willing to put up with the baby daddy, if you're not willing to be with her and counsel her through the bad decisions that she may have made, if you're not willing to love her without judgment, with unconditional love, to be there to help raise the child, don't marry her. I'm going to speak for myself personally. For myself personally, I knew when I was going to the ministry that I was going to be dealing with a whole bunch of crazy people and all their problems. Okay, that's, if you don't know what it's like to be a pastor, that's what it's like to be a pastor. You deal with crazy people and their problems. Right? There are occasionally you meet wonderful Christian people. Most of the time it's crazy people and their problems. So what I knew is that I could not marry a crazy person with problems. So for me, I wanted someone who was sexually pure, because I couldn't deal, and would not be fair to marry a woman who would need tons of love and affection and counseling because of the scars and stuff of her past, because I was going to be doing that with tons of other people. So, hey, there was a girl in college, beautiful girl, wonderful girl, but she had a past. Next. Okay, she married somebody who's been a great husband for her and has helped her through all that. Okay? That's his ministry. If you're going to marry somebody, you better be willing to deal with the baggage they bring. And that's something you need to decide ahead of time. Are you willing to sacrifice your life for that? Now, I want to say this, and this cannot be stressed enough. This cannot be stressed enough, cannot be stressed enough, cannot be stressed enough. You need to decide all of those things before you meet somebody. Because every standard you have will be thrown out the window when you meet a pretty girl. Because you go, oh, she's wonderful. And then you find out all this other stuff about, oh, who cares about that? You need to decide before you meet somebody. You need to decide before you're ever at that stage. You need to talk with your parents and say, okay, what should I be looking for in a spouse? You need to decide that right now. Because what many people do is they figure out their standards on divorce and remarriage after they've met a married man. It's too late. They decide their standards on Christian versus non-Christian 6 months after dating somebody. It's too late. You need to decide now. As a young person, you need to talk with your parents now and say, what is the direction I'm going in my life? Where am I at spiritually? And what do I need in a man, or what do I need in a wife? And what can I handle? What can I not handle? And God is going to call different people to different ministries and different marriages. Right? There are some ladies in our church that they would die if they were married to me. Right? That's just the truth. And vice versa. I'm glad I married who I married. There are some wonderful women in our church, and I'm glad I didn't marry them. And they should praise God they didn't marry me. Okay, that's just the way it is, and that's okay. That's acceptable. It's okay to look at someone and say, they're a wonderful Christian person, but that's not the person for me. You need to decide those standards, though, before you meet someone. Because if you meet someone and you haven't decided about sexual purity, and you haven't decided about baggage in the past, and you haven't decided about whether they're a Christian or not, and you haven't decided about those things, you're going to make your standards whatever that person is. I have seen it over and over and over and over again. Well, is it really that bad? I think I can handle it. You need to talk with your parents before there's an actual name and a face. And you need to come up with those standards before you meet someone. Because it's a whole lot easier to meet somebody, go, oh, wow, they're good looking, and then go, oh, they're already married. Have a nice day. And move on. Than to get deeply involved with them, have that emotional attachment, have all the hormones raging, and then be told, no, that's not the person for you. Right? Any questions or comments on this before we close? Yeah?
Something I was thinking about earlier when you were talking about marrying and divorce, you know, divorce people. It's important that people get their counseling and stuff like that from Christians, because a lot of people end up listening to their friends, and a lot of them are listening to their divorced friends. And I've seen it in a lot of my friends' lives. A bunch of them are divorced, and of course, you know, all the men, they need a fishing partner and a hunting partner, and so they've got you know, they've got a stock in it, so even if they don't mean to, they might not be giving the best advice.
Yep.
They might be thinking about all the fun times they're going to have with this guy once his wife's out of the picture, and vice
yep.
versa. I've seen it and seen, yep. heard the advice that they give each other and stuff. And it's, if they're not listening to good biblical advice, then you know, they're going to be in trouble.
Yep. Yep. All right, Keith, close the prayer.